the ethical. And the second level is where it didn't affect the ethical, but he wants to be with the, he doesn't want to be outdone. He doesn't want to be outdone. That's the second level. So in that area, he's not as bad as the first, but he's still a bad level. And the third level is the least of the worst. Least of the worst. Least of the worst means he's not in the grips. His ethical system is not completely distorted insofar as Tikkun Olam is concerned, but he's basically involved in the area of envy in a sublimated way. In a sublimated way. That's what Shlomo Melech said, that's a waste. It's a waste. Mm-hmm. It means, because it's all of his energies and everything he's involved in, is just the social, and there's no objective. And Yadus, the whole purpose of Yadus is that a person, the premise is that man can have a glimpse of ultimate reality away from the social, and that man should use all his energies to strive towards that end. That's the objective of Yadus. To weave through the psychological in order to be able to reach the objective. In the first level of the second group, the difference between the three levels, I guess, the first level of the second group. You mentioned last week that the Gemara in the Brachos, which really fits in very well to what we were saying last week. The Gemara says that the Tanur Rabbanan, Shimon HaPakuli, Rashi says that he used to sell cotton. His view, Yudches Brachos of Neiram Gamliel Al HaSeder, that he was Mesader 18 Brachos in order. He organized the 18 Brachos, Shimon Asher, which means that apparently there was no, the Brachos, the Gemara says, was Anshek Nesek Dolo Mesak in the Brachos. But the order, the Gemara says in Megillah, Anshek Nesek Dolo Mesak in the order also. But in the Gemara, so the Gemara's a question, since the order was already Niskan, so why do you have to have Shimon HaPakuli to be Misakim? So the Gemara says, because they forgot. The order was forgotten. The order was forgotten over the years, and Shimon HaPakuli rationally worked out exactly what the order of the Yud Ches Bracha should be. So the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, Amal Am Rabbi Gamliel HaChon, Kum Yesh Odom Shiyadeh L'Sakim Birchas HaTzedukim. Is anyone that knows how to be Misakim the Bracha of Olam Al Shinim? So the Gemara says, "Amar Shmuel HaKotan V'Tikna." Shmuel HaKotan was misakin his bracha. L'shana Acheres Shochacha. Next year he forgot the bracha. The Yishkif Boshnayim V'Sholos Sholos V'Lo Ha'alu. And he was thinking about it for a few hours, and they didn't remove him from being the shots. So the Gemara asks, "Why they did? Why they?" All right. The Gemara goes on. But the question, of course, in this Gemara is. That first of all, why does Rabbi Gamliel say to the Chum, Kulum Yesh Adam Shadeh L'Sakim Bechas HaZdukim? What's so hard about Bechas HaZdukim? What's so difficult about it? Nobody can do it. And then it says he forgot it. And he had to think about it for a long time. So what's so difficult about it? So the answer is like this. I mean, according to what we're saying, there is a certain Shimon... Shmuel HaKotan was the one who said that one of the most important principles in life is the idea that a person should be above any type of personal kind of hatred. So he said that the person should be above any kind of personal animosity, above the personal hatred. And the only hatred that a person should have, like Rabbeinu Yonah mentions, is hatred towards Rishoyim, because that's an objective kind of hatred. It's a philosophical hatred. It's like the Sinas HaMolek, you see. So Rabbi Gamliel, when he was concerned about being the Sakin in the Bracha, he only wanted an individual that was on the level, that was capable of being the Sakin, capable of the Sakin of Bracha, that should be in line with that formula, which means to say that it's not any, there is no personal element of hatred, not only no personal element, but you should understand exactly what the nature of philosophical hatred is, because otherwise the bracha wouldn't be niskan properly. So You see the caution that was used in being misakin a bracha. Every word should be in line with a certain philosophical principle. That's why it took him a while. He couldn't remember it. He says he almost a couple of hours until he remembered it. It means to say he had to go back and rethink it and make sure that every word was based on a philosophical premise of the hatred towards Rishoyim. And it shouldn't have any element of personal, and the concept of the philosophical hatred should be fully developed. That's the that you see from the Gemara. So the Gemara says, that's why Shmuel HaKotan was the one that was able to be misake in this brach. That's a good riot to what we're saying. Okay. Now we'll go on to the next member. Okay? It's in paragraph E, your test. What it means is, God will save them, and then it will be even in God's eyes, so then what will happen? So then he'll remove that evil which befell the enemy. He'll remove that evil which befell the enemy. So what does it mean? Why should that happen? I mean, it sounds like an impossible circle. So therefore I shouldn't be happy that the other person fell, because if I'm happy, so it's circular reasoning. I shouldn't be happy that the other person fell. Why? Because if I am happy that he fell, then maybe that which befell him will be removed. So therefore, I should not. Therefore, I should be unhappy. That will result in my being unhappy. So in other words, it's advice which is impossible to follow, because it's based on the same motivation. The motivation is you want that which was evil to befall your enemy. So therefore the advice is like this: don't be happy that you befell him, because if you are happy, then maybe the evil will be removed. So therefore, what should you do? So if that's your motivation, so then you shouldn't be happy. Why? Because that's what you want, so you are happy. So manasha. So that's an impossibility. Make any sense? Don't be happy that the evil befell your friend, because if you are happy, then God will remove it. This way, if you're not going to be happy, so then God will continue to keep the which will make you happy. So you are happy. It's impossible. Yeah. Then God is liable to take a look and it'll change him. So just quietly be happy in a quick little way. So that God shouldn't consider it evil, and somehow or other this will go unnoticed, and the evil will remain with your friend. Don't lie yourself there. Well, what does it mean? Don't indulge in the emotional pleasure if you want the practical benefit of his fall. That's what you want to say. That's what I want to say. Alright, you want to say there's two benefits out of the falling of your enemy. One is a practical benefit. He fell, now he can't bother anymore. He doesn't have any more power. And the second benefit is the emotional joy that he fell. So avoid the emotional joy, so therefore you'll have the practical gain. Practical gain. Okay, remove the contradiction. Yeah, remove the contradiction. The point that he's making is like this. The point is like this. Let's take the premise, which is that there is in the Nefila of Yifcha, there is Nefila Sa'oyev represents the fact that he doesn't have any power over you. Now he loses his power. What it means like this: it means that if a person is in the world of the, if the person lives in the world of the emotional, in the world of the personal, you see, so then he's subject to a different kind of ashgacha. That's what it means. He's an individual who lives in the world of the personal, is subject to a different framework of ashgacha. So what it means is like this: that you've been fully yifchal tisma, that you shouldn't indulge in joyousness when your enemy falls. Why? Because if you do, it means that you're living in the world of the personal, which means to say the world of the emotional reality, and not in the world of objective reality. Because you're happy something bad happened to somebody else. That simply is an infantile emotional satisfaction. So it means to say that the individual's mind is corrupted, because the individual's mind is living purely according to infantile fantasy. So the pasuk says that an individual like that is removed is removed from the level of real hashgach, of real hashgach. So therefore, what might happen is that because he's reduced his level, the onesh, he can suffer an onesh, that this oyev, this enemy, should be successful, and it should be a means of an onesh for him. Whereas if he isn't on the level of the personal, you see, but he's above, he doesn't care that an evil should befall his enemy. There's no benefit in an evil befalling his enemy. He simply wants to live his life according to reality. What happens to somebody else is not his reality, it's not his concern. So it means he's on a level where he's concerned only with the good for himself and with the world of true reality, which is beneficial to him. What happens to somebody else, the world of the personal is not his concern. He's above the personal. Such an individual is in a different level of Hashgacha completely. Different framework of Hashgacha. It's a different kind of a person, he said. That's what the Pasuk says. And as a matter of fact, the Pasuk supports Shmuel HaKotan. Why? Because Shmuel HaKotan made a very big principle out of this Pasuk. And you see, the Pasuk considers it to be no small thing. Because the Pasuk says, that's what the Pasuk says. Tanir Hashem v'rabbeinu v'heshem me'olavato. What does it mean to say? It means to say that there's such a difference between the two people, between the person that is happy at the downfall of his enemy and a person who is simply not concerned because he's in the world of true reality. There's such a great difference between the two that the two are subject to totally different worlds of Hashgacha. That's what the Pasuk says. So that's what the Pasuk says. Bin folo yivchal tismach u'bekash lo al yogel libecha. Tenir Hashem v'rab ein av heishim elavapo. It means to say like this, that if you will be someach, if you will in fact be joyous, be overjoyed that your enemy had his downfall, so it means to say then you are going to be living in the world of the personal. Then you're going to be living in the lower world, in the world of the social reality, the world of personal reality. If you're living in that world, then your status as a father, as the Hashgacha is concerned, is a totally different one, completely different one. And therefore it is quite possible that under that realm of Hashgacha as an onesh, you should deserve to either out of a direct ownership of the Hashgacha, it depends on the present level, or it could be even out of the removal of Hashgacha Sashna, that this individual will rise again. But if you're in the world of the objective, in the philosophical world, in the world of God's reality, and your only concern is insofar as being in compliance and living in accordance with the ultimate reality, so then this Russia that has been removed from you won't rise against you. Won't rise against you. That's what the Pasuk says. See, Pen Yira, first it says, that's what it says, Pen Yira Hashem. Pen Yira Hashem v'rabbein aveshem elavah. It means it's quite possible that the difference between the two levels will result in the success of this Oyev. On the contrary. So the whole idea of your happiness at his downfall could be the very thing which will lead to his rise, which will lead to his rise. But what the concept is that an individual who is joyous over his friend's downfall, an individual who is not joyous over his friend's downfall, but is simply concerned with living in accordance with reality, the difference between two people is a totally different world of Hashgacha. That's what the possibility. That's what the possibility. Okay. His downfall is a form of aggression without direct participation. It means to say it's as if you are in line with as if God, so to speak, is in line with your desire. That's why God caused it. It's a total distortion of the world of reality. It means my emotion is that the other person should be destroyed, and now you see that God joins me in destroying this other individual, and there is a tremendous joy. Basically, it's a very infantile thing. It's an identification. It's actually an identification with God, so to speak, based upon his own fantasy of omnipotence, you see, which is a total distortion of reality. Total distortion of reality. And that's why that is so different from the person who looks at God in a philosophical way, in a true way, and understands his that his emotions are not the source of reality. Not the source of reality. Just because some of your friends suffered a loss, no, it has nothing to do with you personally. He understands that he doesn't. There's no way for him to understand Cheshbon as a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing to do with it. A person who believes that is living is simply continuing a base emotion, an infantile emotion. That's why it's considered such a low thing, such a terrible thing. Thing on the contrary, what the idea, the nucleus of the idea is that the very thing which he's celebrating in his infantile mind could actually be exactly the opposite, because a person in that frame of mind thinks he knows reality, you see. But a person in that frame of mind is completely distorted. So it could be just the contrary, that he deserves an onus, and that his friend should be successful. And he's completely misreading the whole situation. Because a person that's under the influence of such an emotion will completely misread reality. That's what the essence of the memory is. That's the essence of the pasuk. Because that's why it says that exactly what he is celebrating is going to happen to him. What does it mean? It means to say that any individual that thinks along those lines, that feels when his enemies fall, that God is directly involved in creating their downfall in order to please him, has a completely distorted view of reality, and exactly the opposite might very well be true. That's the So what does this have to do with Pirkei Avos? What does that have to do with Pirkei Avos? It sounds like a study in psychology. Now, it doesn't sound like there's anything important with Pirkei Avos. Yeah. Because it's new. Why? I can't explain why. Why is the mind attracted to new? I can't. You want to go beyond that? I don't know. I can't go beyond that. But you see, there is such a phenomenon. There definitely is such a phenomenon. What? Well, yeah. That's true. That's why they sell it. That's exactly why they use the psychology. Yeah, because of the fact that the person loves the new. Okay. So they know. They know what the person's looking for. Yeah, what does it say? You need to be chadashis. Call yom 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 yachik chadashis. The point is that b'chol yom yom yachik chadashis, the world of the newness to the individual in Torah, in other words, from a psychological standpoint, that's what Baron Kotler really wanted to say. He said the world of fact is mishchadash b'chol yom. So it means to say the Eitzar is Mitzrayim Mitzrayim Chol Yom, because you can't get a person unless you have something new, unless you have constantly something new. But psychologically, from a psychological standpoint, the world of Torah is more attractive, because it's the true ideas and there's greater eschatus, greater newness, and it satisfies psychologically the individual. We spoke about the last time, that the world of thought, man is created in a way that the world of thought should be very satisfying to him, even more satisfying than anything else. And the world of creativity has a greater degree of newness, because there's nothing as new as a new idea, you see, and it's easily accessible to the individual, and it draws the individual. So it's that's what Baron Kotler said, Zelu Mazeh. What he wanted to say was that man's nature is such that the world of Torah is constructed to fit the person exactly, to be the most satisfying experience that he can have in this world. Okay. But the point I want to get back to is that the Niyar Chodesh. So what does it mean to say? It means to say that there is that since we are created that way, so we must utilize those things in our nature which lend themselves towards the perfection of man. Even though it's a psychological phenomenon. Or physiological phenomenon. whatever it might be. But the point is, we must take advantage of those parts of our nature which lend themselves to perfection. Perfection means the retention and apprehension of ideas. So therefore, a person should make sure to learn and to study much when he's young, because when he's young, he has that additional dimension that he can remember more. That's why Baya felt bad, you see. The point that Elisha ben Avuya was making was that a person must always utilize, as far as he can, all the benefits, the natural, psychological, and physiological. We must study man to know his nature, so that you can utilize for the purpose of perfection every element that will help a person, whether it's a psychological element, an element of nature, physiological element, whatever it might be. But you must utilize that towards perfection. So since the fact is that in early youth we have a greater capacity for attention, so a person must make use of that. That's what he said. If any of learns a law, may Lee yell it, but it doesn't matter, it's the same thing. It means that what is the yell like? We're concerned about the yell, not about the lomit. Okay. Like lomit tell us, okay, it says like this. It says, Shimaherin if said as a ksivahi. It says, because it's lost very quickly, very rapidly. Now we the Torah isn't going to be retained. The Loma Ekra, and why should I read the Hevel Ayaga? It'll work for nothing. He says, it's an interesting thing. There was one philosopher that maintained that a person that doesn't have a good memory eventually really is going to waste his time becoming a scholar. Because he says eventually he's going to get very depressed because he can't remember, and it's going to be a depressing situation. So he recommends that a person with a bad memory really shouldn't be involved in thought. Who was it? Plato. Okay. It's an interesting thing. He says, V'loma ekra v'heva layageya. What's the difference if he doesn't remember anything? Because they're going to give him the schar anyways. So Ben Yonatan. Mashul Asocher, Shinosan Lishnei Polim. Raskol Nakuva Lidlos Bomayan. He says, Upasak Imam, Lasasim Malachazu, Yom Echot. So he says, there's a marshal, a guy hired a guy to take water out of a well. And he gave him a pail that has a hole in it. And he told him, he says, I want you to do this malach all day long. So Tipe Shomer, so the fool says, Matos Malachti. What good is it for me to do the work? The water keeps flowing out of the hole in the pail. Apikeyachalma, the smart one says, Umali Ashra Yitnali, what do I care? The water goes through, who cares? He's going to give me the money. Kachazakin, Malo, this is the same thing for the old man. Malo Ibnu Shokhea, what does he care if he forgets? Same thing, Shainos Nalo. Echaramabe Vecharamamit, doesn't make any difference if he learns more or learns less. Luvachi Shavali Bubashamayim. Okay. So it sounds like a funny thing. It sounds like a long came Rabbeinu Yonah and just undid the entire memory. But Elisha ben Avuya said that there's a world of difference between the two. And Rabbeinu Yonah says it doesn't make any difference. He's going to give you a schar anyways. I mean, do we learn for schar? The marshal's not a good one. Marshal of schar means somebody's going to give you a reward. So what do you care if the water's going through the pail? But the fact is, that he's going to pay at the end of the day. So if he's a jerk, he wants to pay you, what do you get? You take the money and be a pekech. But the but insofar as the Talmud Torah is concerned, doesn't seem to make any sense. I mean, we're not lomeid for schar. On the contrary, lomeid has to be Torah l'shma. Has to be l'shma, not for the schar. We don't learn for schar. We learn because this is the and if that's the case, what he's saying is true, so what's the difference in the whole member? What do you have to say, Alome Yelad, no Alome Zokin? What difference? It makes no difference. As a matter of fact, he says this. He says, Mabakach, he says. What's the difference? Yeah, well, yeah, well, yes, there's a loan, exactly. A loan in the Kabbalah class, always loan, with the young, with the old, doesn't make any difference. A couple of points. What is wrong with suicide, philosophically?
You know, it's considered one of the worst ever.
But philosophically, what is... Everybody knows it's considered a horrible error, but to explain what is wrong with it is not that easy. Distortion of life. But wherein lies the distortion? That's what I want to know. Wherein lies the distortion? You're right. I mean, life is given to a person to perfect himself. It's true. So wherein lies the distortion? Right? The great philosophers one time asked this question. So he answered. He said that a person has no right to do such an action, and he gave a mushroom. He said if a person would have owns a donkey, let's say. So the donkey belongs to the owner. And if the donkey would kill himself, so the owner would be angry because he has no right to destroy himself because he's not in his own rishus. He's not under his own bylaws. So he said, similarly, we are all in God's rishus. And we have no right to make any changes in, so to speak, God's estate. So we're part of God's estate, so we have no right to make any changes. Which is a good answer from a metaphysical standpoint. Metaphysically, it shows you that you can't do it. But it really doesn't answer the question. Because if I could show you that it is a good for the animal to cease to live, so it would come out that the owner, see, by the owner of the animal, the owner is only concerned about his own good. So that's why he'd be upset with the animal, so to speak. But in terms of God, you have to say that God is concerned with man's good. So you have to show me first why it is not the good for man, you understand, to do it. You can't just say because the mushal is not really not a good mushal. Because by a person needs the animals, and therefore will be upset. That's what upsets him. But in terms of God, you can't say that God needs the person. He doesn't need the person for anything. On the contrary, God created the person for the person's good. For the person's good. The benefit of the person. So his existence is for the benefit of the person. So why, if it's for the good of the person, then he should cease to exist. So what is wrong if the person takes the liberty of doing so? You know, what is really wrong with it?
I think what's wrong with it is what this Chazal says. The Chazal we had before. Tezayin. Rav Yaakov Omer, Olam Hazeh, Doma Leprozdor, B'fnei Olam Habah. So it means like this, that this whole world is only like an antechamber for the real existence. Now, it means to say, you see, what do Chazal say? It's not simply a Musar idea that a person should just live every moment and think that he has to prepare for the next world, and he shouldn't enjoy this world. Chazal didn't believe in that. Chazal believed in enjoying this world too. Many, many, numerous Chazal would show this. Nothing wrong with a person enjoying Chaye Shah. Nothing wrong with it. The only thing that Chazal insisted on, not that a person should abstain from enjoyment in this world, but that a person should have the correct perspective with regard to that enjoyment. You see. That it's only an enjoyment of Chaye Shah. That's the important thing. But the moment a person places tremendous importance on the Chaye Shah, then he's involved in distorted reality. See, for instance, where a person feels, like you see a lot of people feel, in my life I could have had this, could have had that. And it eats them up. They feel they could have had. That's nonsense. What do you mean, could have had? Could have had, it doesn't make any difference now. Now it doesn't make any difference what you would have had. Nonsensical. It's only a Chaye Shah. See, Chaye Shah means it's a momentary thing. So it only has value at the moment. That's it. But to say that this existence is real is a reality in terms of an accomplishment, to accomplish something, that this is the life in which we have our major accomplishments. You see, that's a distortion. And that's the way most of the world, so the Rambam says that most of the world believes exactly the opposite of the Chacham, you see. Because they maintain that the whole, that a person's essential accomplishments is in terms of what he can do in this world. So therefore, that is a total distortion of reality. The reality is that the true accomplishment is only in terms of the future, a person's existence in the future, where he can be in a state where he can perceive Chochmas Hashem endlessly. That's really the goal. That's really the goal. And this Chaye Shor is only a means to arriving at that goal. Therefore, a person who feels that he's lost, he has failed to accomplish in this world. He could have had this and he could have had that. That shows that the person maintains that this existence is the area in which his accomplishment should be made, where his essence lies. See, that's the distortion. Now, when a person takes his own life, usually the reason why a person takes their own life is out of frustration, out of a sense of frustration. So it means that the person feels that they feel there's a certain anger that they feel that they couldn't have what they wished to have in this existence, and the anger is turned towards themselves and they destroy themselves. You see, so it comes out like this, that a strange result. But the result is that the distortion in suicide is an overestimation of this existence. The mistake is that they don't know the Maimer, fourth Perek, Mishnah design. So their anger at the fact that they, at their frustration that they couldn't achieve what they wanted, causes them to turn the anger against themselves, and therefore they destroy themselves. That's why you're right. That's why the halacha differentiates. The halacha differentiates that if a person kills himself because he's in terrible pain, he's not in the cloud of the mabedat maladas. So the halacha says. Right. We see like Shaul killed himself because of COVID. Shaul killed him. It's worse than Ritzicha. It's worse than Ritzicha. Why is it worse than Ritzicha? Because in Ritzicha, a person didn't commit that distortion of reality in Ritzicha. And in this case, a person is distorting the entire reality that God presented before him. It represents a total distortion. It's worse than Ritzicha. But it depends on the motivation. If a person is in terrible tzar, I'm not saying that he's mutter to do it. Not that much. It's also for a different reason. Because a person is supposed to be mekabel the yisurim that God ordains for him. But he's not considered a mabedat maladas. Not considered a mabedat maladas. And Shulchan Aruch has brought down that you don't, all the rules, all the laws that apply to a mabedat maladas don't apply in such a case. Whether you're sabalan or where you're buried, these laws don't apply to a person who did it because he couldn't tolerate the suffering. It's a different concept. Not because he's angry at the fact that he wasn't able to overcome his frustrations. If he can't overcome his frustrations in this world, then it represents a total distortion of reality. Well, if a person kills himself because he loses his money, that's exactly the case of Mabedat Maladas. That's an overestimation of his existence. That's why he kills himself. It's frustration. Most people who are emotionally against suicide is not because of this philosophical reason. It's not because of the reason that the real reason, which is that they recognize that you can't overestimate this existence. On the contrary, it's because of an overestimation of this existence. Because they overestimate this existence and they think that all the fantasies are going to come true. So therefore, they think it's crazy to kill themselves. You understand? Exactly. That's just like the same thing would apply to a person who takes care of his health. Most people take care of their health not because of the right reason. Like the Rambam says, if a person takes care of his health just for the sake of the physical, he says it's no different than any other taiva. It's only to be considered praiseworthy if a person takes care of his health because it's a means to him being able to understand ideas. Then it's a to understand Chachmas Hashem. Then it's considered praiseworthy. But the Rambam says clearly, if a person just takes care of his health for no other reason than the fact that he wants to enjoy the physical life and he wants to make sure that he lives as long as possible, that's not considered a laudable reason. That's just like any other taiva. That's not considered praiseworthy. It's only if the person takes care of his health for the right reason, which means they should be in the best situation so that he could learn Torah and partake of mitzvahs to the greatest amount possible. But if he does it for another reason, for the physical itself, then it's just another taiva. It's not no perfection at all. The Rambam says it clearly.
Making a mistake, a political error. That a gadol can make a political error. Yeah, it's possible. But the story of Yossi, that's the story really of Yossi ben Yehuda. The story of Yossi ben Yehuda was that he was taken out to be killed. And the one that was riding on the horse that had all the covet and the honor, he said to him, he said, now, where's your God? What happened? How is it possible that I am have all this covet and I'm in the best possible state and you're about to die? So Yosef ben Yehuda answered him. He said, "Im lo over ritzon kach." If a person that violates God's will, if he has such a covet in this world, could you imagine how much covet a person that is osa ritzon? So really, you could elaborate a little. You can understand it in another way also. Not the, a little differently than the way we explained the last time. It's not a contradiction. But the point, what was he telling him? And you see that the moment he heard it, he was so convinced that he changed his whole life. And there, actually, you see, he killed himself. He committed suicide. And the Gemara says that he, and what did Yosef ben Yehuda say? That he was Zochet to Chayei Olam Haba. It's an interesting thing. So you see that it's not suicide per se that is considered such a horrible thing. But it's the idea of the overestimation of this existence which is the horrible distortion. So the reason that he killed himself was because in the process of he took upon himself Arba Mises Bezd. It was a process of tshuva. So that was not only mutter, but it was Zohar Chayei Olam Haba. You see, it's not simply, which is a further corroboration of what was in yesterday. Questions like this. His question is a person, yeah, the only thing is one guy is frustrated and the other guy is not frustrated. A person who lives this world because of all the taivas. So he also is involved in the total distortion. Why isn't he considered as bad as a person who kills himself? What's the answer? It's true that a person is a chote. He's following his taivas. That's true. But there is no finality in terms of his decision. No finality in terms of his decision-making process. That this is what it is. If a person kills himself, then it means that is a final decision. If a person is involved in taivas, he's involved in taivas. Taivas have the best of them, but there is no absolute action which he has done or taken upon himself to, so to speak, like to concretize this concept. He's involved in taivas today, fine, the taivas have them, but it's not an absolute action, whereas suicide is a final absolute action. That's the difference. The action reflects the level of the conviction. Philosophically, you're right. If a person... See, most people that are speaking taiva, they're simply under the influence of the taiva. But it's not really because they've made a decision about life. They haven't really made a definite decision about life. They're just under the influence of the taiva, so they follow the taivas. A certain amount reflects the fact that their mind is following along to a great degree. There's no question about it. But it doesn't represent an absolute conviction. It doesn't represent an absolute conviction. But I'm not saying that it's impossible. I agree with you. It is possible to have a Russia who has made an absolute decision and acts in accordance with the, even though he doesn't kill himself, you see, but that person would definitely, is the same way. I mean, Hitler, Baruch Shemal, or other Rishi Olam, that it'd be the same thing. Ain't a chanami. Be just as bad. It's just that a person is stam, is a Baal Taiva, you can't say that this person has made that decision. But if a person has actually come to that level where that is his final, he's rationally, that's his conviction, you see, that's what his mind is convinced is the reality, ain't a chanami. He's on the same level. There would be no difference. those people usually follow. That's why you see Hitler and Machshimal committed suicide. Those people who have that kind of a conviction, as long as their fantasy, they believe, can occur, so they won't kill themselves. But the moment that they see it can't take place anymore, then they kill themselves. Exactly. The suicide is a reflection of their whole value system before. Getting back to the Yossi ben Yehuda story, there's another way to understand it. He said to him, he said like this, he said, if you see
You see that the Russia gets this far in this world, so Kal Vachomer, the Tzaddik, will definitely get much more. There's a way to understand on a practical level also. What it means is like this. What it means is, what is the schar of the Russia in this world? Why does the Russia get this, get schar? What is the schar of the Russia in this world? The schar of the Russia in this world is based upon the fact that we're not talking about some a person who's an incompetent. We're talking about a Russia who's a competent Russia. Now, competent Russia, has to use rationality. That's considered the worst crime, by the way, to use a person's seichel for evil. Because, like the Rambam says in the Mora, that a person who uses a seichel for evil is using that which God gave him to perceive Chochmas Hashem. He's using it as a means to satisfy his own instinctual desires. Okay, that's why the Rambam says it. It says, "Hiruri Aver is Kasha Me'aver," worse than the Aver itself. Planned out rishis is the worst thing. But nevertheless, you see one thing. You see that he's successful because he planned it out. He's successful because he planned it out. Right? So it shows you that the world works according to Chachma. Because if the world didn't work according to Chachma, the Russia would never be able to be successful. Right? So that was the Kal Vachomer that he told him. Kal Vachomer is like this. That if you see that the way this world operates is that even a Russia, doesn't matter, if he employs reason, so you see that he could be successful, so you see that the world, the universe, operates according to Chachma, how much more schar must the person receive if he's essentially a Chachma? If he's essentially a Chachma. That's what he said. In other words, he said, what do you see? You see that the Russia was matzliach. Why was the Russia matzliach? Well, he was matzliach, not stam. There had to be some way to his matzliach. He was matzliach because he thought it out. So you see, the universe works according to Chachma. So how much more so must the soul of an individual gain if he's essentially a Chacham, if he applies his Chachma to the very way of life itself? He must receive the greatest reward. That's what he told me. So it's on a practical plane also. Russia is the biggest threat, and Tzaddik must receive the greatest God. The greatest God. Because here the Tzaddik is the one that's rational insofar as its very existence is concerned. And the whole universe works according to Chachma. So he must receive a reward that's unbelievable. That's the answer. Chacham. You see, he changed his whole life, and that was it. Slightest deviation from Chachma can result in tragedy. Can you imagine how much tragedy must befall the person who essentially is devoid of Chachma? Must be that way. You see? That's what he is. The schar is both in this world and the next world. But the schar in this world, the thing about the schar in this world and the next world, is a hard schar to see with your eyes. It's only a schar that a person can see with his mind. That's the problem with schar v'onesh. The problem with schar v'onesh is that the schar v'onesh is not visible to the senses. The real schar is only visible to the mind. That's what Yossi Ben Yehuda said. A person cannot perceive the schar that a tzaddik has, the joy that he has in life. A person cannot perceive, because he can't see that. He only sees externals. But he can't see the schar, the reward that the person has from the internal, from the fact that that there's an internal harmony in his soul. That's something which an outsider can't perceive. A person can't perceive the joy that a Moshe had every day, is getting up in the morning and facing a day of learning, and the fantastic amount of joy that he experienced in his life, because it's not visible. Only the individual that experiences it can know what it is. So that schar, one day of a tzaddik, is worth more than the whole life, all the joys of a life of Russia, in terms of this existence itself. But it's something which is impossible for a person to see with his eyes, because a person only knows as the outside. He can't see the difference between the pain of a distorted soul and the joy of a soul that's in harmony. He can't see that. It's not visible. Just like the reward Olam HaBo is not visible as well. More, Ayin L'Rochel L'Kinz L'Sechel, much more. That state is one which we don't even apprehend fully. Only great tzaddikim can apprehend it partially, but the reward is, that's why Chazal talk about how great the reward is. The judgments that people make in Schar Onesh is because they're completely superficial. Completely superficial. People say that. And either the only reason people say that is because people are so tied to the superficial that they want to believe that that which is invisible is visible. They want to believe that way. You see? That's why, because to them the only value is the visible. So anyone that maintains that you can look at a tzaddik and you can tell the level of his perfection, or you can tell the level of his inner joy in life, is speaking nonsense. There's no possible way. Even a Navi Yisrael, Shmuel Navi, was unable to detect it. And it's Kal Vachomer, a regular person. It's impossible. It's not visible. It's not visible. People want to believe that everything, because they believe. David Leibowitz, he brought a proof, he brought a nice proof of that, because they were telling him that the David Leibowitz, they were telling him that the they could tell that a person is a tremendous tzaddik. Look at this person, you can see he's a tremendous tzaddik. He says, no, there's a Gemara exactly the opposite. But it says by the Shunamis, when Elisha came by periodically to this, the home of the Shunamis. So they said, let's build a little attic, so put there a mita of a kisei of a shulchan and menorah. So when the Navi comes, the Yisholikim comes, he could go, he could stay there, and he could learn. He has a place to sleep, to eat, to learn. So the Gemara says, Minayada the Gemara asks. How do they know? How do they know he's an Yisholikim? Gemara asks the Kasha. What do you mean, how do they know? They took one look at him, they saw, Elisha, can you imagine? See, this Rebbe looks like this. Imagine what Lisha look like. You just take one look. You'll see. Of course. Obvious. But the Gemara says, no, I'm not Yoda. How do they know? So the Gemara answers that there were signs that they saw. Nice chinuch. And where's in Vayikra? So the chinuch says in Karbonos. Now, what's the reason for Karbonos? So the chinuch says, because when a person identifies with the animal, of course, and there's a certain identification, and the animal is killed, so then he realizes that he, too, deserves a misa. Because God doesn't want a person to lose his life, he only wants him to change his ways. So he says that what's the definition of what is an animal? He says an animal. The idea behind every carp. That's the most fundamental principle in Yadis. One that believes in these crazy things about reading palms and reading faces, there's no level, no person can be more devoid of Chachma than that. Jump back now to Mishnah Yutet. Okay? And you had an interesting machlokas there between Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. He had an interesting machlokas. What was the machlokas? I mean, it's not clear from the Mishnah that there is a machlokas. I want to point this out to you. And from the Rambam, it doesn't seem to say clearly that there is a machlokas. But the Rabbeinu Yonah learns definitely that there is a machlokas. There's definitely a machlokas. Okay? Is, should you learn from an older person? Should you learn from an older person? Or should you learn from a younger person who is a chacham? Of course, no one would say you should learn from an older person who's not a chacham. That's crazy. Because he's old. I mean, he's not the Seva talking to him. His Seva is a chacham. Mishakana Ladat Ben Ezakim, Mishakana chacham. So it's only chacham that we're concerned with. But still the question is like this. Should you learn from it? So what's the question then? So there shouldn't be any machlokas. I mean, you should learn from the person that's the chacham. Right? But Rabbeinu Yonah learns that there still is a machlokas. A machlokas tanoi. Machlokas tanoi. Okay? And we explained that what is the idea of an older person? An older person has two advantages. First of all, an older person is one who has been able, simply had the amount of time
to perfect himself in terms of rarefying his thoughts, clarifying his thoughts, processes, and also being able to remove, there's a certain element of dross in a person's thinking process. And as a person advances in thought, he learns how to think in a more, his thought is more purified. So that's why they say it's like the yayin without the shmar. It's like the wine, when you take out the wine away from the dregs, the sediment. The sediment is a sediment of the mind. So a person who's an older individual, he has had a longer time to go through this process. So generally speaking, if you have two individuals, you have a person who's young, who's starting to learn, a person that is learning many years, so he's clarified his thoughts, he's been able to purify his machshavos, and his ideas are much clearer, and he removed the sfeikis. The sfeikis come from the fact that a person can't think properly. He doesn't know it's this way, it's that way. But a person who has a clear mind doesn't have many sfeikis. That's why you see in the Rishonim, you don't have many sfeikis in the Rishonim. Occasionally you'll see they mention sfeikis, but the Acharonim, you'll see loads of sfeikis. This way, that way, it comes all kinds of sfeikis. Why? Because the Acharonim didn't reach the level of the Rishonim where their thoughts were very purified. So they Mahalach HaMachshava. So a person has a right to go according to their Mahalach HaMachshava in Torah. And Acharon is unable to do it. He's not on that level. He doesn't know whether it's the Ramban's way is right, the Rambam's way, the Tosfos. So he can't, he's not on that level. So that's the advantage of an older person. Also, another advantage of an older person is the fact that an older person is more removed from the emotional involvements, because the emotions are stronger when a person is young. A person is older, the emotions lose their grip. That's why you'll notice in Perek Shishi it says Ben Arboim Labina and Ben Chamishim L'Eitza. It's in Perek Hamishim Chafal. Ben Arboim Labina, because when a person reaches the age of 40, so Bina means that his depth reaches its height, his depth of understanding. A person is learning all his life. When he reaches that age, see, life is made for a person to. The reason why God gives a person 70 years is because it's an ultimate kind of thing, that a person should reach these different stages during his lifetime. So when he reaches the age of 40, he should reach the maximum level of his depth. And 50, it says Eitzah. Eitzah is even, what's the difference between Bina between Eitzah? A person so intelligent, he reached the highest level of Bina at 40, so what more does he need? What is Eitzah? Eitzah is advice. What does it mean? Advice. Political advice. Halachic advice. Advice. So the answer is because advice, the one who can give you the best advice is the person that's most removed from emotional involvements. That's why a politician can't be a good politician when he's young. He's too fired up. Even today, you see, even when they're older, they're not. But certainly not when he's young. Because when he's young, the emotions are completely, he's involved emotionally. So he's unable to make decisions, practical decisions. He's drawn by different things, different activities draw this emotion, that emotion. So he's not a Baruch of Eitzah. He may have Bina at 40. But Eitzah is a different thing, because Eitzah is in terms of the practical. In terms of the practical, you have to be completely removed from any kinds of emotional attachment. A person sees certain things, certain decisions are more attractive to his emotions, he's going to be drawn to that decision. So that's why it says, Ben Chamishim L'Eitzah. So a zakein is an individual who is removed more to the highest possible degree from the world of the emotions. So that's why Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda said they should better learn from the skinim. Don't learn from the youth, because the youth may be very intelligent, but they don't have these two advantages. They haven't been able to really go over their thought processes and to purify and rarefy their thoughts, but a zakein has, okay? But along comes, So Rav Yehuda Nasi says like this. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, it doesn't make any, that's not the right way to do it. Why? Ein holchem b'chochma l'acharov. What does it mean? You only go by what you see, basically. That's what he means. Deim yimtza k'tanim nevonim v'divreim nechonim v'chochmasam merubo yilmad lefneim. If a person finds that the younger person is more of a chochem than the older one, so then he should go to the person who is younger. Okay? He says, "Ushnei advar meila elihu amar osan." He says, "In these two things, Elihu said. Elihu was, Eliyahu had his friends, and Eliyahu had his complaints, and his friends wanted to say that he's wrong, and Elihu, his friends wanted to defend God, but the only thing was that their method of defense was not a good one. See, later, it's an interesting thing. Later, God told the friends that they have to ask Eliyahu from his father for them, because their defense was not proper, because they condemned Eliyahu. They condemned Eliyahu. And Eliyahu said, no, I didn't sin. And they condemned him. They said, God is right and you're wrong, and they condemned him. And God told them later that they have to ask Eliyahu to be mispalel for them, because they did wrong. They did wrong in condemning him. Even though their aim, their purpose was good, but you see, if a person, even though he has a good purpose, but if he goes about it the wrong way, he's considered a chote. So he said it like this. He said, up to this point, Elihu said that this was the right thing to do. Apparently, it was the right thing to do, to wait. Because he says that, Yomin Yidaberu, it's Lamed Bezan. Mati Yomin Yidaberu, Varov Shanam Yidu Chachma. No reason for me to jump in when we have these, the Yeshishim, the older people. Acheni says, however, Ruachi Ve'enosh. Achen Ruachi Ve'enosh V'nishmas Shaddai Tevinein. He says, but really, it's a Ruach. There is no monopoly over knowledge. You see, Ruachi Ve'enosh. It's a spirit in man. V'nishmas Shakai Tevinein. And it is from God that he gives a man knowledge. Lo rabim yachkomo. Not many will be wise. Not the many are wise. So it's not something which you have. I mean, just you can't. You can have a lot of people like the Mesudas David says a nice shot. Says meaning plain shot. Lo rabim yachkomo. He says we see many people. Lo yimsu balam chachom rabim. You won't find in the world many wise people. Afki rabim heimo asher shoktim be'iyun ha-chokhma v'shtadlus ha-chakira. He says, even though there's a lot of people that work on gaining knowledge. I mean, it must have been his day, not today. Rabim heimo asher shoktim be'iyun ha-chokhma v'shtadlus ha-chakira ki ein adova tolui ki in beruach ha-sichli u'ma'at heimo asher kanu asa. Because it's the ruach ha-sichli. Ruach ha-sichli is something that you can't possibly, you can't control. Person has no control over it. A person can't say that I studied X amount and that's why I'm a chacham. It's a ruach milifnei elokim. It's a ruach elokim. The person is endowed with this ruach, so then he sees chacham. He's not endowed with the ruach, even though he learns and he works and he tries, he can gain a certain amount, but he's not going to be the great chacham. Lo rabim yechkom. Okay, uzekainim yavinu mishpat, and older people will understand Mishpat. It's not the truth. It's not really true that an older person, there's no particular concrete method that you could subscribe to which will give you Chachma. Even if a person works in learning, he works in Chachma. But lo rabin yachkam, only a few. It's a ruach alakim. The ruach shakai tavina. The ruach alakim will give them understanding. That's what Elihu said. So Elihu seem to say both ways. It's an interesting thing. Is he in contradiction? I mean, first he waited, he says, because the Yeshishim, the older one. Then he changed and he says, no, he says, it's not true. Ochein, ruach ivanosh. It's a spirit in man. Chachma is a spirit. Chachma is not something that you could just guarantee that if you do a certain process, you're going to become a chachma. Certain knowledge, a person, it's true what the Gemara says, that you guide the v'lom matzasi al tamen. If a person works in learning, he's definitely going to gain. He's going to become a lam, he's going to become a chacham. But that's a different kind of a thing. Real chachma essentially is a ruach mufnei olakim. After all the learning and everything, is a ruach mufnei olakim. It doesn't matter if you're old, doesn't matter if you're young. You can be a Rav Elazar ben Azariah, 18 years old, and you can be the biggest chachma dog. There's no monopoly over chachma. That's what Elihu says. Yonah says he quotes that. He says that's what Elihu says. The lefomim ki ayeled yechkam min azaken. Sometimes the young person can be a greater chacham than the older person. V'tiyach chachmasam uvushelas mimenu. Udvarim mesukanim uvurim advarim. Machin tov olecha sacha yeled v'chacha me'ish zokein in the soap punim. Ve'inenu kamo v'chacha. Okay? So that's what Rav Yehuda Nasi said. So what's the machlekes?
That while it's true there's no guarantee for chachmas Hashem, there's no way to guarantee chachmas Hashem. Even though a person does all the right actions, but there's no guarantee that he's going to be a greater chacham than another individual. But in the absence of knowledge, it makes sense to follow certain signs. Certain signs. In other words, chachma is a ruach alakim. It's true. But it's not just a ruach alakim in a vacuum. It's a ruach alakim based upon a certain type of involvement, a certain type of study. So therefore, when we don't know, so what Eliyahu said was that as long as I didn't know, so I must assume that the chachamim are the ones that are involved in chachma, because that activity gives a person chachma. But then when I saw that they don't have the chachma, so then I can't say if they don't have chachma that I don't have chachma. That would be totally illogical to say just because they don't have it, so therefore I don't have it. Because ultimately it's a ruach alakim. But nevertheless, there's a certain process that is involved in obtaining chachma. Chachma doesn't just arrive at a person in ruach alakim, a person who is not involved in the proper activities. So therefore, at first, if we don't know, we should go to the individuals who have involved themselves in the proper activities, and the assumption should be that these people, the odds are that these people, the probability is higher that these people have the answer. But if they don't have the answer, we do not say that people who don't have these qualities can't have the answer. That is also wrong, because since chachma is a ruach alakim, it's possible that those that don't have those signs do have the chachma. You see, that's why Eliyahu did the proper thing. First, he went according to the way a person should assess the situation and go to the chachamim. But it doesn't mean to say that if the chachamim don't have the knowledge, that he doesn't have the knowledge, because there's no monopoly of the knowledge. So therefore, it's a ruach alakim, and he may have the knowledge, even though those who are older and those who have learned more than him don't. You see. So that's why he did the proper thing. But what's the breakdown of the machlokas between Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda, between Rabbi Yehuda and Nachum? What's the machlokas? In other words, the question is like this. The question is only whether they're both chachamim. If they're not chachamim, then of course nothing to talk about. Then definitely he's a, what do you call it, an empty tale. So, but it means if they're both chachamim, so then I have to make a decision. Should I follow the one who has all the requirements, meaning that he's a person that is he's intelligent, he's learned all his life, and he has the advantage of being older, removed from the emotions. Is that the person I should choose for a Rebbe, or should I choose for a Rebbe the individual that expresses the highest level of chachma that I see? See, that's the question. That's the machlokes. So according to Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda, you should go to the ones that have fulfilled all the requirements of being chachamim. Even though you see a younger person that's sharper, because he may be sharper, he may even be more intelligent. But the point is, the other perfections he can't have to that degree. So therefore, you should definitely go and learn by the Zakenim. You see? Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, what a person should do is simply make the judgment based upon the overt chachma that he notices in the individual. That's how he has to make his decision. That's the machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, between Rabbi Yehuda and Yehuda. For instance, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. When you go to the chachma, to the one that has the greatest chachma, even though he may not be as refined, but nevertheless, those other elements may not be as great, but you go ein l'dayin l'mashin avos, ein hochem b'chachma l'acharov. That's it. And you go to the person that you see that expresses the greatest level of chachma. Yes. Matzinas adam and aleph. Okay, mishneh chafalaf. Yeah. So let's take the Rambam, because the Rambam has the shortest course in this memory. All the Rambam says about it is like this. He says, Amar akino v'ataiva. The avas hakavod motzien etz ha'odom in ha'olam, removes a person from this world. He says, "V'hu ki be'ela hamidos o ba'achas me'an," because with these characteristics,
or with one of them, Yafsid Emunas HaTorah Behecha. He will have to lose, interesting thing, he will have to lose his Emunah and Torah. V'lo yagilo lo maila sichlios lo maila samidos. Means a complete destruction. Matzim Sanam Olam represents the fact that he is worthless existence. So he says that if a person has these three or one of them, he is going to have to lose his Emunah in Torah, and he'll never reach either the Mailas HaSichlios or the Mailas HaMidos. It's an interesting thing. So you see the Rambam's idea of perfection of Midos. One thing you see from the Rambam, what does the Rambam hold? And the Rambam says it openly. But the Rambam's idea of perfection of Midos is not a natural phenomenon. There's no such thing as a natural Bal Midos. It doesn't exist. No such thing. This person is a Bal Midos, but Tevi, by nature, is a Bal Midos. There's no such thing. And the Rambam says it openly. The Rambam says that perfection of man is like a like an art, like an artisan. So it's just like an artisan isn't born with his abilities, but it has to be learned. He says, insofar as man is concerned, this perfection must be learned. It's a learned perfection. So therefore, even perfection of the midos, is not something which is b'teva. It's not something which is b'teva. Anything that we have b'teva only represents a certain type of mida. A person's a nice person, or he's a mean person, or this. It just represents different facets of the midos. But in itself, it is not. It's not a perfection. Not a perfection at all. Okay. Yes. But he says the Rambam. There's an extensive Rabbeinu Yonah on this. I think it's worthwhile to go through because he goes through every different aspect of kina and taiva, in practical terms, how it expresses itself. Now Rabbeinu Yonah is a very big psychologist, so it's an important Rabbeinu Yonah. We'll get there. But the Rambam deals on a philosophical level. The Rambam's philosophical about it. Rambam just says that if you have one or all three of these midas, that definitely you don't have any emunah in Torah. Why? Why does he have any emunah in Torah? It's an interesting thing. He says yafsid emunah satorah. A person can't be a Bal Taiva and have a Munas HaTorah. He believes in the Torah 100%. That means he can't be a Bal Taiva. It's a contradiction. He can't be a Bal Gaiva and have a Munas HaTorah. I mean, why not? And why these three? Cover this guy. And why these three? Rambam identified the problem. He said it's a problem in the Munas. It's a problem in the Munas. It doesn't mean that a person that is a mechanic, it doesn't mean that a person who is envious, it doesn't have any emunah. Otherwise, nobody would have any emunah. Because everybody has the midah of the kina, and it's a midah in the person. You can't say every person that has taiva doesn't have any emunah. Right? Everybody has taiva. Or a person that everybody likes covet. Everybody naturally likes to, feels good if you respect them. They have a certain measure of self-importance. And if you respect the person, it makes them feel good. So everybody likes covet. It doesn't mean, that's not what it means. What it means is, if a person is entrenched, there's a difference between, like the Rambam differentiates, between Rambam says a person that's a Baal Lashon Hara is Ein Lo Chayav Gomor Mabo. A person who speaks Lashon Hara is Yesh Lo Chayav Gomor Mabo. But Baal Lashon Hara means that's their essence. Their essence is that's their whole life. What is going on with this one? What is going on with that one? And to go from this one to that one and compare and talk and gossip. A person that's essentially a gossiper. Is Ein Lo Chayav Gomor Mabo, but not a person that speaks Lashon Hara, because everybody speaks Lashon Hara. Same thing over here. A person who is a Baal Taiva, essentially a Baal Taiva, he is a person that lacks Emunah. But just a person that has Taiva doesn't lack Emunah, otherwise nobody would have Emunah. So you have to differentiate in the Rambam between these three, whether it's an essential characteristic of their, essential part of their makeup, or whether it's just a... It's not essential, but they just involve themselves in these things. That's the difference. Okay? So, he says, Kapok's edition is Obachim, Hifsid Hadas Behechel. Hifsid Hadas Behechel. He lost the essence of the, he lost the religion essentially. Okay, but that's what he means, the same thing. Emunah doesn't mean decisively. So, the Emunah doesn't mean what people today think of Emunah. Emunah in the Rambam means, when especially in the translation of Shmuel Ibn Tibbon, Emunah means an understanding. Doesn't mean Emunah that he believes. It means he understands. So why is it that these three things, and only these three, cause a person to lose his Das, his Emunah, his Das? So let's just take each one. Kina,
What does kinnah mean? Kinnah means that a person is envious of another individual. So that means to say that his reality is completely based, we mentioned this many times, he lives in the world of social reality. What is socially real is to him ultimately real. There's no reality beyond the social. That's a social being. Okay? That's a social being. That's the reality. So a person like that can never attain any type of perfection. For a simple reason. Because there is no reality beyond the social. There's no reality beyond the social. There is no concept of a reality beyond the social. It's impossible for the individual to attain perfection. In order to attain perfection, a person has to perceive that there is a reality beyond that which society maintains as true. Beyond that which people consider to be real. But there is an actual reality which is the reality of God. The reality of the Borei Olam. And that is the only reality that a person should be ultimately concerned with. Even though he may be concerned with social reality also, but he has to recognize that there is a reality beyond the social. If he doesn't recognize that reality, he can't perfect himself in any way whatsoever. Because everything he does is just going to be based on the social. Okay? That's kinnah. Then you have two more. You have taiva and kavod. What is taiva? Taiva means that a person is overpowered by fulfilling his fantasies. That's what taiva is. Taiva basically is a quest to satisfy a fantasy which is unsatisfiable, you see, but you can't satisfy it. So it means like this. It means if a person is driven essentially by that, that's his essential drive, so then it's impossible for the person to be concerned with any type of objective reality. Because his primary concern is simply to satisfy that unconscious desire. Do you follow what I mean? So again, taiva will remove a person from any quest for reality, because the only thing he's searching for is to satisfy a fantasy. Yeah, because every satisfaction is basically an attempt to satisfy a fantasy that existed in the person that was unsatisfiable at a very early stage in his life. So he's going to try the rest of his life to satisfy that. So that satisfaction is one that's completely impossible. And since his life is dominated by that desire, if it dominates his life, it completely obliterates any kind of reality. That's all that he's interested in. No, reality can't survive if he's essentially concerned with that. That's his essential quest. And what's the third one? And the third one is kavod. Kavod is there's two parts of man, really. Really, there's two parts of man. One part of man is his desire for libidinous satisfaction, his desire to satisfy himself and satisfy his instincts. Then there's the instinctual desire. That's one. The other part of man is the part that, on the contrary, it looks down at instinctual desire. But it wants to desire something else. It desires a respect and recognition. Right? That's the side of man that's looking to be omnipotent and is looking to be immortal, you see? And that part of man can subordinate and reject the type of part of man. So really, man is made up of two components. There's the one part that's searching for libidinal satisfaction, instinctual satisfaction, and there's another side that actually forfeits those satisfactions in order to attain a sense of self-respect, power, immortality, value, self-worth. That's his essential drive. So what the Mishnah says is that there's three ways that you could lose your perfection. Two ways is if a person is involved in either one of these drives, either the libidinous drive, if that's essentially what he's after, or if he's essentially after the other side. He's after the drive that is going to give him a feeling of tremendous self-worth, you see. That's the opposite side. That side, of course, you know, the people that are into that side, they pride themselves with the fact that they suppress the taiva, because they say you suppress the taiva in order to be successful. So the success drive is the drive for the egoistic satisfaction. It's the opposite side. So what the Mishnah says is either side, if you are immersed in either side, you can never attain any perfection.
because either one of these two is going to prevent you from recognizing that there's a reality outside of this, outside of your libidinous drives. There's a reality, or there's a reality outside of your egoistic drives. You see? The third way you could obliterate the possibility of seeing a reality beyond the emotional is by the social framework. The social framework. Because if a person accepts the social framework, so then it's impossible to believe that there is, or for him to be convinced that there is a reality beyond the social. So either, that's why the Mishnah says these three. That's what the Rambam means. That with these three, you could lose your whole Olam Haba. Why? Because these three will prevent the person from perceiving one thing, that there's a reality beyond, not dependent upon the instinctual or the social, but there's an ultimate reality. The moment you can't see an ultimate reality, that's the end of perfection. That's what the Rambam says. That's how he explains the end. You're happy with a slot in the society. Doesn't have to be after tremendous cover. Doesn't have to be after tremendous title. But he's comfortable living within the society, the framework of that society. Such an individual will, of course, see an individual, of course, like that will have kina. What it means over here by kina doesn't necessarily mean that he has to experience the ending. Any person that accepts the social reality, the social framework, will always have kina, because the social reality is going to cause him to have kina, because that's the reality. In reality, this guy has more respect. But he could overcome it. He could say, look, this is it. I'm not going to become the most famous person in the world. But the kina will always be there, right? It's an underlying thing, but he covers it up. But the reason why he has the kina is because of the fact that he accepts the social reality. But the acceptance of the social reality will prevent him from ever seeing that there's a reality beyond. And if you don't see there's a reality beyond, there's no perfection. That's what the Rambam. The Rambam takes the member totally in a philosophical plane. Elosh Nayim. Haderech ha'echad. Mekanei betova. Hu derech ra. Hu haderech ra. Ve'inyan harishon ki yirech haveiro tov v'ra be'enav. Alright, it is like this. Okay. V'chasher osik b'tor b'mitzvah sholof v'derech tov v'mekanei bo. Ki hu sone o v'yashem v'osei ritzono hamida zos mochis min olav hi ra gdolo b'kino v'nikrish mo sone Hashem. That's the first way. Right? Hayin Hashem lo yei rabbeinu v'chad ki sone derech osik b'tor. This all comes under Derech Aleph. You have three cases. The case of the person who hates those who do good, who follow God's way. That's the first case. The second case is he doesn't hate those. It's just that what? Oh, the first way is like this. First way is the first way what he does is he hates the whole Derech Hashem. Because he hates the Chachamim. So he hates the Derech Hashem. So therefore he despises the whole philosophy, the correct ethical philosophy he despises. You understand? Because of his envy, so therefore he despises the correct ethical, the Derech Hashem, the correct value system. Alright? He despises the whole value system. That's the first way. The second way he says is what? The second way is not that he despises the value system, but he just dislikes the fact that his friend is doing good. He dislikes, as an average person, he's jealous of his friend as being osir b'tara, So he's jealous that why should this guy is, he would rather remove his friend from learning. That's what it means. But he wishes his friend didn't learn so much. His friend learns, bothers him. So over here, he doesn't corrupt the system. He doesn't corrupt the system. It's just that he has a wish to remove the act of learning from his friend. Okay?
Why did he do that?
Because of his envy. He wants it himself.
The first way is that he hates himself.
Didn't we say that he doesn't want?
That's right.
Didn't we say one time in the second guy?
Okay, one. Yeah. The first guy. What's the third guy? The third one is that he actually motivates him to learn. Okay. Now we said there's one thing I wanted to add. In the first way, he hates the Chachamim. So what is the hatred for the Chachamim? Why does he simply get out of this area? Let's try another field for competition. So the answer we mentioned yesterday, last time, was that you see that what happens is he really recognizes, unconsciously he recognizes that this is the truth. Because a person has the Tzelem Elokim, and therefore which he can't deny, and the Tzelem Elokim perceives that this is really the true way. In order to overcome that perception, which would lead him to a conflict because of his envy, which he can't tolerate. So therefore, what must he do? He must hate it. Hatred is a reaction against the unconscious desire of recognition. You see? And that's really the pshat that Pesi mentions. He's right. The Chazal say, Makiris Ribonom Umachavnin Limrodbo. It's a strange Chazal. Chazal say, a person named Makiris Ribono Umachavnin Limrodbo. What does it mean? How is it possible? Sounds like it's impossible. Makiris Ribono, so how can Umachavnin Limrodbo? Is Makir God? Umachavnin Limrodbo? It's absurd. It's an inherent absurdity. What do you mean? If he recognizes God, God is the creator of the entire universe. So therefore, he's going to intend to rebel against him. He has to be totally crazy. So what's the answer? The answer is that Machiris Ribono is on two levels. Machiris Ribono could be on a conscious level. That means that he recognizes God. He understands what a person can understand of God philosophically. Then, of course, it's absurd. You have to be insane to be Machavim Limrabo. But there's another Machiris Ribono. There's a Machiris Ribono which comes from the Tzelem Elokim, recognizing the truth, but the other part of his nature denies it. The other part of his nature can't tolerate it. So therefore, he fights the recognition, and he acts in a rebellious way to prove that there's no such thing. There's two types of recognition. It means there's a recognition which is a conscious recognition, conscious philosophical recognition. In that case, a person, it would be impossible to have a Machiris Ribono Machavnin Limrodbo. It's absurd. It's crazy. But there's a Hakara which stems from the Tzelem Elokim operating on its own. The Tzelem Elokim senses that there's something true here. Then, if the person wants to deny it, he has to go to the opposite extreme in order to satisfy his psychological needs. And that's the same thing over here. The first case, the person hates the Chachamim. What does he hate the Chachamim for? Because of Kinnah. So what? Kinnah means competition. So he's envious, he's jealous, so he can't possibly succeed. Somebody else is going to be more successful than him. Fine, so don't go, so get out of this field. Go on to something else. No. What happens is he hates the ideas that the Chachamim portray. Why? Because he senses that they're true. And it's the same thing the Gemara says. The Gemara says, M'sachon. The Gemara says that that when an Amoritz sees a Talmud Chacham learning, so it's Kilu Bo'al or Asasa B'fanav. The worst possible deed. Why? Because he senses that this is right. See, a part of his Selam Elokim is working, and he senses that this man has what is the ultimate good. And therefore, it destroys him. The hatred is great. Matter of fact, Chazal say the hatred is so great, it's greater than the hatred of the Goy towards a Jew. Greater than the hatred of an anti-Semite to Klal Yisrael. the hatred of an Amara towards the Talmud Chacham and the Chassidim al Isak B'Torah. It's an amazing phenomenon. It's amazing. But what does it show you? All these Chazal show you one thing. They show you that Yadus recognizes the fact that the Tzelem Elokim operates, can operate on an unconscious level, so to speak. I wouldn't say unconscious, but it's a level which it's a level in which he does one part of him, the his rational conscious self doesn't perceive it, and on the contrary denies it. That's the principle you see from this Chazal. Yes, it's a part of human nature. What? In other words, you have the Tzelem Elokim, which picks up ideas, and then you have the selective psychological aspect, which doesn't want to allow every thought to be realized. So it works, and it sets up certain defenses. And one of them, what it usually does is it goes to the opposite, it tries to isolate those things which are alien, which cause it pain, and it goes against them. So that's the... It's a part of a person's psyche. Dora Mabel, they're so corrupt that even that's what the Ramban says. That's why they were deserving of being destroyed, was because even rationality didn't play any role anymore. That's why Lenechtam Zardinim al Gezel. So they saw that destroying their own society, they couldn't stop because of the Taiva. But that doesn't mean to say that they don't perceive it at all. Not true. They do. A part of them perceives it. But the hold of the Nefesh HaBahami is so powerful that it will never result in any kind of action. It doesn't have the chance to result. But the Nefesh HaRuchni, the Tzelem Elokim, always works on some kind of a level. And if it stops working, it means it ceases to be another. That's true. That's a good writer that Michael is bringing. Because the fact was that he may neach zeh slik, as neach didn't spend enough time trying to mockzer the people b'tshuvas. You see, they were capable. There still was a Tzelem Elokim. So you have to separate three cases. One case is where you see the Talmud Chacham, what the Talmud Chacham reflects to him the ideal, and then he's motivated to be like that. That is perfection. That's nothing at all. The second case is where he sees the Talmud Chacham and he feels the Talmud Chacham has something that he should have. You see? It's on a social plane. That is considered kinah. The third question is a different point. Why does he want this? Does he want this because he wants kavod, or does he want it simply for its own sake? Even if he wants it for its own sake, it still could be based upon kinah. Okay. That has nothing to do with whether it's kinah or not. You know what I mean? That's a question of lishma or lo lishma. Right. That's a different question. Lishma or lo lishma means why does he want it? Does he want it shehei nikra rav? He wants it because when he walks down the street, people will respect him. That's lo lishma. But does he want it because he recognizes this is the good? Then it's lishma. But even after he recognizes the good, it still could be based upon the fact, it still could be based upon kinah. Because what it is that he wants to make sure that he has, this guy has it, I want it too. So why should he have it, not me? So then it's motivated on kinah. Recognize that it's the good, but he's motivated, it's the other guy that gets that makes him motivated. Why does he have it? The difference between lo lishma and kinas ofim is like this. It's a big difference. In lo lishma, we say mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma. It means the person does not have any recognition of an inherent value in Torah. It means the only value is the effect. So why does he? By the way, that depends on the society. You know, it depends on the society. That's why he told you. Devil Levitz one time said, Devil Levitz Chaim Laracha was a he was one that it was Rashi and Karadas. And then he started Chavos Chaim Yeshiva. So people used to say that in America, they said there's no Torah Lishma, like there was in Europe. So he said exactly the opposite. He said in Europe, there was very hard to learn Torah Lishma. Because he said in Slabodka, when they walked down the street, the women sitting on the benches would stand up. So very difficult to learn Lishma when there's so much covered. So over here in America, you sit and learn the Thinking Meshugana. On the contrary, anybody learns here must be learning Lishma. So... So lishma depends upon the societal benefits. That's what lishma is. So therefore, if a person learns Torah because of the benefits that he gains, he has no shaychus to. He has no recognition that Torah itself has any real value. That's why the Rambam says, and it seems clear from Chazal too, that the only mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma is only if it's bo lishma. because it's Bala Shema, but if it would remain like that, it has no value whatsoever. Masha'ina came kinesophrim. Kinesophrim doesn't mean that they don't recognize the true that there is a true value in learning Torah. They recognize there is a true value. But the motivation is a competitive one. It's based on competition and kino. Why am I motivated? If I know there's a true value, but look, I mean, I'm not going to get so excited about this ultimate good. But if I go down I see the street and I see my friend's one, he's doing it, why shouldn't I do it too? You see, there, that's a totally different level. That means that I recognize the good. That's already a high level. There, I wouldn't say, by kinas ofim, I wouldn't say that, and you see the Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't treat it that way, that if it doesn't reach the ultimate level, then it's worthless. Bar l'shma and lo l'shma, over there, if you never get out of the lo l'shma, it's really worthless. It's just la'olam yasok adam b'tarav mitzvahs afilu shelo l'shma shemitoch shelo l'shma bo l'shma. That's what the Gemara says. That's why you should do it. You see. But if it will never reach the level of lo l'shma, it's worthless. I mean, a person can't know, so you have to always do it. But the fact remains that that's the only benefit. But by kinas ofrim, even if the person remains all his life in this state of kinas ofrim, he still is on a high level because he is involved in the good for its own sake. But one part of him is the motivating. One part of his motivation is based upon the social comparison. Okay? That's why one part of his nature is really not perfected. Well, a kardim lachbaba is the worst thing. Kardim lachbaba, I often thought about it. What's the difference between lo lishma and kardim lachbaba? Lo lishma, it would seem that they're pretty closely related, because lo lishma means you're doing it for the different benefits. And kardim lachbaba also. Kardim lachbaba means I use the Torah as a means to attain something that I want. So that's what a person does when he does lo lishma. This is the difference between kardam lachbarba and between lo lishma. It's a good question. What is the difference? Because they both seem to be involved in utilizing Torah for some other purpose. So what's the difference between the two? I think the difference is like this. You see, in lo lishma, like Rashi says, kadei shehi nikra rav. So what does that mean? Means to say that he recognizes that Torah, he sees that Torah is on a high level, and people respect Torah. So therefore, he's motivated. He wants that respect too. He wants that respect too. But it doesn't mean to say that he doesn't think that Torah itself is an inferior kind of thing. No. He sees Torah as a very important thing. He recognizes it's an important thing. But he's not motivated by the importance of the Torah. He's motivated by the effects of the importance, which is that people recognize. He's the Nikra Rav. He enjoys the fact that people respect him. You see? So that is... But he doesn't deny that Torah is important. Yeah, fine, it's important. But the only thing is that doesn't move him. He's only moved by the effects of the important object. But in the case of Kardam Lachbarba is where he takes Torah and he subordinates it and uses it as a means to attain something else. That is a worthless, that person is totally worthless. You see? Kardam Lachbarba means where he takes the object of, what is the Isser of Kardam Lachbarba? Because Kardam Lachbarba means what you're taking is something which has a higher value and you're exchanging it for something of an inferior value, which means to say that you're taking Torah and you're subordinating it. You're making the material gain, kardam malachbaba, literally. It means that he's going to use Torah to make money. So that means to say that what is the real value? Money. And Torah should be subordinated to the money. That's the worst level. That you can't say, over there we don't say mitoch shel olashma b'olashma. Because he's involved in a process of exchange. He's exchanging the higher good for the lower, which means to say he is inherently giving it a lower value than the material. Kadam lachbaba means he's taking Torah and he's exchanging it for the material, which means to say that it is subordinate and inferior to the material. In the case of lo lishma, he isn't subordinating Torah. He's not subordinating Torah to the material. He recognizes he's not subordinating to the for the material. What he's doing is he's saying, this is a great thing, but I'm involved in it only for the effects. You see? But he's not denying the fact that in reality it has a great value. The only thing is that that's not why he's involved in it. It's where a person, the kardam lachbaba is immediate, is direct. Kardam lachbaba means somebody's going to give me $10,000 to give a shiur. So I'm going to go down and give the shiur for $10,000. If it wouldn't give me the money, I'd never give the shiur, and that's it. That means I'm using Torah to make it. It's a means of obtaining a material object, material wealth. It's a material object. That's kardam lachbaba. It means use it like a hoe. So that is, that's the worst.